Source Elements on the Mic, a brand new weekly series of conversational but thought-provoking podcasts with Mike Ayton, leading voiceover artists, post-production mixers, and music engineers. A heady mixture of audio opinion, observation, learning, philosophy, reminiscence, and downright humour. Muse, audio, and remote working with Mike and his guests. Stay well connected and treat your ears to Source Elements on the Mic.
Hello and welcome to Source Elements on the Mic with Mike Ayton. In episode 5 of Source Elements on the Mic, we put Flemish voice actor Serge Demar from Budapest on the spot in What's Your Source and discussed Serge's radio DJ origins, the public's perception of a voice actor, and the interplay between sensitivity and critique. In this episode, number 6, we discuss the emotional and personal dynamics of a recording session, who to follow on social media and why, Serge's studio setup, and peer-to-peer websites. On the Mic, the audio and remote working global podcast. Quite frankly, it's rude not to. Okay, so when you're working in a session, do you like it when sound engineers pip in with opinions?
Absolutely. I love it when it's teamwork, and a lot of sound engineers, they have very good ideas. They know what they're doing. They have been in the business for so long. They see a lot more projects coming along than voiceovers, I guess, because sound engineers are working full-time on different projects. How many projects a day can you do, right? As a sound engineer, probably a lot. As a voiceover, not. So no, I do appreciate when people pitch in and have their ideas.
It's interesting you say that, because you're making me think now. I have a distinct memory that when I was doing short form, so trailers, that I used to find out you'd have an hour to do the average promo for TV, and in would come the voice artist. You'd have to record the voice and then mix the M&E and blend it all together and make it all work. And you kind of have an hour, and you go through this kind of roller coaster where you'd almost have to reach your perfect crescendo in the last five minutes of the session, where you kind of go, that's it, we've peaked, sort of thing. And then the director would go, yep, that's it, thank you, can you just put it where it needs to go, whatever. And then there's this huge come down afterwards where you kind of go, oh, I've got to go through the same emotional ride with the next one that comes in. And you've got to build up to a crescendo yet again, often with a completely different voice artist.
Right.
I used to find doing promos, because I'd put my heart and my soul into it, very emotionally draining in that way.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
I wonder if it's the same for you, where you have to go from, you know, you're voicing a corporate thing about nuclear reactors to suddenly doing something about, you know, men's mental health or identity, gender crisis, or you know, and you suddenly have to switch gears so much. That do you find it draining doing so?
I don't find it draining, but it is not easy to switch like instantly. So what I usually do is take a small break of like 10-15 minutes if it's something like that. For example, if you're voicing imaging for a radio station or something, and like you're shouting and everything, and then afterwards you need to record a script that's much more intimate, then I do, it's not draining to me, but I need a break, because otherwise I cannot get in the right mood.
You've got to let the adrenaline out.
Yeah. Because you have that rush from that script that's like, that needs all that energy, and then you go to something that's much, much softer and emotional. Then you have to be able to switch. So what I usually do is take a break, go downstairs, walk downstairs, open the fridge, and drink some water or whatever, and
kick the cat, you know,
relax for a couple of minutes, and then come back. As an audio engineer, you can't do that, I guess, right? Because you have like 1 hour, and the next hour.
I used to smoke, I used to find going out for that cigarette sort of between used to help, and now I don't smoke anymore, sort of thing, and you kind of think, oh.
A carrot break instead of a smoke break. Bring carrots with you.
Carrot break.
Go outside, eat some carrots.
Love it.
They're bloody hard to light.
Yeah. You have to eat them. Don't light them.
Like, Don't smoke them.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm doing 20 carrots a day now.
Oh God.
I've never been so unhealthy.
Right. Yeah. Now we need labels on carrots as well.
Yeah, don't smoke these, kids. Don't remember.
Yeah.
So do you prefer open or closed talkback between takes?
What do you mean by open or closed talkback?
Okay. In the old days, talkback was always off. And second you'd finish a take, you'd be sitting there in the studio or down the line waiting for God to sort of review, think, watch again, and then come up with his direction. Mm-hmm. A more modern trend is to have the second you finish your take and the transport stops, talkback opens and you can hear discussion. Some people like that sense of discussion and being involved and hearing everything. Other people kind of like, oh, I need a moment to sort of reflect, what did I do myself? You know, how did I feel about that? Before God talks them over the headphones and says, can we have the same again but different, please?
Bring me another rock.
Yeah, can I have it faster but sounding slower?
Yeah.
Right, something like that. If it's that, then I prefer not to hear it. But but no, in general, I do like the open talkback, when it's closed, then you're thinking, what are they saying? You see the mouths going and they're like having a discussion, like, what are they saying? They're probably like, he's terrible, we should get someone else.
He wears Crocs. I'm never letting him in my studio again.
Yes.
Right. We're not paying him.
Yeah.
And they're probably just talking about, hey, what are we having for lunch instead? But you don't know. So I'd rather have the talk back open. And when they're doing that, it's fine. I can still disconnect from that and reflect myself on what I just did.
Okay. Yeah.
Would there be any voice actors saying, well, no, I don't want to hear what they're saying? I don't know.
Some people like that kind of sense of silence and solitude and peace. But in general, I'd say as a ratio, more people preferred open rather than closed. But I think it depends on the dynamics of the session.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah.
Because if you're doing a big commercial and you've got a room full of creatives, often they like to have the who's most important in the zoo type discussion. And everyone's got to say, I think one frame forwards. And he goes, no, one frame backwards.
Yeah. Yes.
And I'm more important than you. And they need to have all that and then distill it all down and then go to the voice talent. Yeah, we loved it.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally agree. There needs to be, if there's like 20 people in a room, no, I don't want to listen to that. There needs to be one person who tells you what they actually want, who summarizes everything, like, okay, we liked everything, but who makes the decision, basically, right? And tells you, okay, this is a decision we made, and we need you to do this, because otherwise it's just... But if it's only like 3-4 people, then I'm fine with it, and I'd love to listen in and be part of the discussion, because sometimes you can just be very helpful as a voice actor, just like the sound engineer can be very helpful with...
Sound engineer? Helpful? Yeah. Surely not.
Yeah.
So how do you think learning in the industry has changed, for better or for worse?
Oh, how it has changed?
Yes.
I think it's always been there, right? I mean, it's just different. There's no one, you're not going to a voiceover school where someone tells you how to do stuff. So you have to figure it all out.
So it's less formal.
Yeah, it's less formal. You have to figure it out yourself and try to connect with people and coaches and casting directors and audio engineers and try to be like become friends with them or I don't know what and just try to learn from them. I don't think it has really changed these days. Maybe I'm getting old and maybe there is like this institution where you go through and then at the end you become like the best
it's like
voiceover
the Monty
ever.
Python School of Voiceover.
Right, something like that. I don't think...
Like next to the Ministry of Silly Walks.
Yeah, I don't think it really exists. I wouldn't have time to teach other people how to be a voiceover. So I do think the people that do have the time probably...
Aren't doing the work.
They aren't due to... For whatever reason, right? Because maybe their voice isn't good enough anymore, it's too weak, or they're getting too old, or they don't like it anymore. They just prefer to be on a schedule instead of, like, don't know...
Yeah.
You don't know when you're going to work or whatever.
Source Elements.
Do you have any YouTube channels or Instagram accounts or people you particularly follow or watch, either for learners or even, indeed, for... experienced people? Are there any people you can recommend?
Stefan Johnson, he's an American. He is very popular. I'm not on TikTok, but apparently he has like over a million followers or even more on TikTok. He's on Instagram too, and he posts his best stuff on Instagram, which is more than enough for me. But he's really good, and he's really good at the social media thing too. And I love to watch these things. I recently revamped, well, a couple of years ago, revamped my whole Instagram and tried to make use of the algorithm and just get rid of all the personal people from my Instagram account and I started following a lot of voice actors, casting directors. And that makes that every time I open up Instagram, I see all those voice actors posting stuff. Like some things are not interesting. A lot of things are very interesting. They post good tips. Some tips are rubbish, or, well, I mean, they're just posting to post something, which is fine. They're not relevant. I already know them because I'm so smart. right. But yeah, Stefan Johnson. Oh my God. I have so many people on my Instagram that you should.
Are you a follower of Booth Junkie at all?
Oh yeah, I like him too. But he's more like the technical, he does more like the technical stuff, right? I like him too. He's very good. I follow a lot of Dutch and Belgian voice actors, international voice actors. There's this one guy in Thailand. His name is Krit Tone.
Okay, don't know him.
I believe he's fairly young, but he voices like all these car commercials and in English. And his voice is just so... Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a mismatch. I hope I'm not insulting him when he hears this. But I mean, his voice is very different from what he looks like. You wouldn't expect...
I find that quite common, actually. That it's quite interesting that I often play a mental game myself of imagine what someone looks like based on the sound of them. And often your preconceived ideas are so wrong.
Well, I mean, they're probably 100% of the time.
And some of the people who sound really butch sometimes are, you know, you think, oh, I was expecting you to be 7 foot tall and 260 pounds and you're like me, 5'8" and sort of slight, you know. Well, no, I wish I was slight, but... but that's, you know, that's success in that they're selling or convincing me of something that is not my expected.
Another guy who you need to follow on Instagram is Brent Allen Hagel. He is in California. He does a lot of movie trailers, so that's why I follow him. And same thing there. He can change his voice, make it a lot deeper.
In a world.
Source Elements.
Okay, what nuggets have you learned early on in your career that have stayed with you?
I'd have to say the talking to a friend thing. In radio, that's a huge thing, and obviously in voiceover as well, which was very difficult for me to get rid of that tone when I was hosting my radio shows too. And at one point, it just clicked for me, I guess. I don't mean that with like, it was one day I just was not doing it and then the next day I was able to do it. It was just like gradual, but there was one point that it just clicked, like, okay, conversational.
Now, I get it. Yes.
Yeah, I get it.
It's an awakening. Yeah.
I always got it, but it was difficult to produce it, to sound like you're not reading from a script.
Yes.
Because, Mike, I've been reading from a script all the time for like an hour and 15 minutes right now, or 45 minutes. How long have we been recordings? This is all pre-scripted. No, I'm just kidding.
I wish. Yeah.
Right. Don't you like how conversational I sound? That's the most important thing I learned, I guess, in my whole career.
Source Elements.
Okay. What advice would you give your younger, ambitious self?
Calm down.
It's interesting. Because you're tenacious, and your tenacity has really come across, that you really have just never given up. You've always kept pushing and kept elevating and kept.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you say to yourself, calm down.
No, I mean it I mean it like in a, I've always been like, and I still in a way am worrying about things, thinking about, oh, I want this, but it's not working out. So I'm worried about, why isn't it working out? I've gotten better at it, like calming down, like easing my mind, not that running all the time, like that energy or that anxiousness in your body. But it used to be like very bad, like, stressed about things that didn't happen or things that went wrong. And looking back at it now, I'm like, yeah, a lot of things went wrong and terribly wrong sometimes. Yeah. But I'm still here. We're still alive. The world's still here.
I've often said to people that I'm glad I'm a sound mixer. Cause I can always rewind and do it again and drop in and not a pilot.
Yeah. Well, you can't do that in radio, for example.
No, but that's why I gave up live TV. I preferred post-production because I always thought I had this sense of good enough never appealed to me. I always thought I could do it better. I want to have one more crack at that. I've got another idea. But that's why...
It gives you stress, no?
Yes, that's why I discovered for me that I hated the sense of I got away with it. I don't want to get away with it. I want to do the best I can. And for me, that meant quite often having a second attempt at things. And I really liked, and one thing that was said by, who was it? Ben Burt, I think it was, who said the quote about sound design that, you know, it's being not frightened to go down 9 wrong turnings to get to the right one.
But aren't you like, when you have a do-over, you are much more critical of yourself and then... I sometimes have, like, I'm not satisfied ever. I'm never going to be satisfied because I always think there's something that I can do better.
Okay, that's an interesting question. That raises the sort of the Sting philosophy of a mix is never finished. It's merely abandoned due to transmission.
Right, yeah.
You know, the creative person can keep on creating and honing and infinitely polishing till it's, you know, you can till you get past the Japanese state of perfect, you know. But it's still not good enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's the pro of doing stuff live. Well, you cannot do it again. So it's out there. It's done, and you don't have to worry about it anymore.
I think it depends on which side of the fence you sit on.
Because it is what it is.
For me, a greater sense of satisfaction came from the second attempt, or the third attempt, or the fourth attempt than the first attempt of nearly. Yeah, that wasn't bad. Or that went quite well. I understand that pleasure, but it was never as great as the former for me.
Yeah. But then again, if you're doing, for example, live TV, you rehearse like 50 times. I'm exaggerating, of course. But and then it gives some kind of satisfaction when you actually nail it, when it's actually live, no? Although even if it's not really perfect.
That is actually a fair point. Although I always found in television that 95% of the rehearsal was all about camera moves and the look, less so about the sound. Yeah, you know, they'd have stand-in members of the pop band there pretending to play while they're worried about the camera moves rather than actually can we have the band playing another 3 times and get the mix perfect. But hey.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah.
And sound, it's just assumed you will get it right.
Yeah.
Because you always do.
Right.
You're the defender, you just don't make mistakes. Yeah.
The world is a melting pot of ideas. Connect to the global creative village. Collaborate with class-leading synchronization, audio, and picture. Innovative, affordable, and flexible solutions. With enviable support. Be a part. Create together. Source Elements.
Okay, so let's now have a little talk through your setup. We'll change gear a bit here. De-philosophize and up the technical ante here. So you've said you're a Mac man. Are you a laptop or a mini or an iMac?
I have a MacBook Pro and a mini. For the booth, I have a Mac mini. And then I have the MacBook Pro on my work desk, which I use that one with an external display, and I can take the computer with me when I travel and I need to record on location. But the Mac Mini is separate, and it also gives me the opportunity to when something goes wrong, I can switch out the computers and just continue my work.
Yes,
with the other computer. But the Mac Mini is great.
You have a spare.
Always a spare.
So And what audio interface do you use? I think you're an Apollo Twin guy, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I had an Apogee for a long, long time. And then I don't...
The Duet.
Yeah, that one. And I'm not really that technical. I'm probably more... I know more about the technical stuff than the average voiceover, I think. But I'm not like a tech guy. So I asked someone, what mm-hmm. would you recommend me, an audio engineer? And he said, well, you have to go for the Apollo Twin. Universal Audio is so good. So I said, okay, I'll buy that one. And then I got it and was like, whoa, this is great. I love it.
You really noticed the difference.
Oh, absolutely. And all the things that you can do with the plugins. And yes, there is a huge difference. Absolutely.
Because you can record with plugins on the way in, yep. can't you? Because it's got the DSP.
Yeah. Yeah, not that I'm doing that myself. I usually get someone to do it for me, but then and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. Yeah.
Okay, and which digital audio workstation do you like to use?
I always worked with Cool Edit back in the day, in the late 90s, early 2000s.
And CEP.
Yeah, I kept working with that, which is now Adobe Audition, of course, but... yep. I'm very familiar with that. I can do, probably not using every feature... But it's still fairly similar to the old Cool Edit, and I can work yep. fairly quick with it. So, yeah, that's my preferred one.
I always wondered, was Sadie a big one in Holland with radio people? Because it's huge in the BBC.
Oh, no, I don't think so. No.
Headphone-wise, you're a Beyerdynamic man.
Mm-hmm.
770 Pros, I think you said earlier, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're very comfortable on your head, and they're not that expensive.
They're fully enclosed, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. The sound is good, too. You can turn them very, very loud, which I used to do when I worked at the radio station, which is not good for your ears.
Yes.
But yeah. But
a lot of radio people do like it quite cranked.
Yes. Yeah. The louder the better, but it's not good for your ears. Don't do it.
No. Remember children.
Right. Remember. Disclaimer.
Yeah. Microphones. What's your poison of choice?
I think just like a lot of American voiceovers, I have the same things. It's the Sennheiser MKH416 that I'm speaking into right now. And I also have the Neumann yep. TLM103.
Yep.
I have two of them. I think that's enough.
Yeah. Why the two? Do you have a just because in case you connect to a client who wants something sounding a bit different? Or
yeah.
If I put a shotgun to your head... Excuse the shotgun pun. And said, you can have one desert island microphone. Would it be the 416?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think the Neumann is amazing. It's very good, but it picks up too much other stuff.
Yes, it's very, very sensitive.
It's so sensitive.
And it's very low noise as well.
Yeah.
From memory.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Lower noise than the Sennheiser. But it's the Sennheiser is still...
And you can scream into it as well. It'll take a lot of input.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to remember. I think I recorded my electric guitar with one once.
Yeah.
Quite at 105 dBs and went. It sat there and went, yeah, and?
It was like, yeah, sure. And, okay. Doesn't hurt me at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, my ears were giving up before the microphone
wow.
was, but hey.
That is crazy.
Okay, let's now talk about your booth. This is obviously a point of much interest for many in your community.
Mm-hmm. I have a Studio Bricks booth, the Studio Bricks 1 voiceover edition, but it's a little bit customized because I'm quite tall.
Ooh,
yeah.
Hark at you.
Yeah, I'm quite tall. So I needed a raised roof, so that's what I did. I put an extra section on it so it's higher.
A convertible. I love it.
Right.
My booths, I have a convertible. It's like a VW with a raised roof. Yes.
And I can say it's a custom booth, right? Although it's really not, but I can say it. It's custom.
Nice.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, I like it a lot. It's a huge difference from my walk-in closet.
In fact, everyone who I've spoken to who said, I now have a booth, has said, I wish I did it earlier.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I didn't endure with the closet or the wardrobe for mm-hmm. so long.
I wish I could get a bigger booth though, but yeah, I mean, it's great for what it is.
Source Elements.
What about, are you a sitter or a stander? Because some have said that studio chairs are odd because sitting is the new smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a sitter or a stander?
I do both. For the longer work, I'll definitely sit. because I'm an old man and my back hurts after a while. Mm-hmm. But for like commercials or for stuff that needs lots of energy, I'll stand up. But I'm sitting right now. Okay. I mean, because we're having a nice chat, I want to be comfortable as well. So if it's like low-key stuff, like e-learning, well, you still need some energy in e-learning, obviously, but still...
Not as much as a full sort of character animation thing. Or,
yeah.
Yeah. And presumably all radio shows are done sitting down, aren't they?
So that's the interesting part. I was standing up at the Q Music, the national radio station. We were allowed to sit, obviously, but they preferred us to stand up. And I kind of like that standing up thing. Like, you have more energy, you have more control over all the, over the board, and like, we stood up.
Didn't know that. I mean, admittedly, my background's TV, so I never went to Broadcasting House very much, so didn't have much to do with the radio side of the BBC. But
I'm sure they're sitting at the BBC on a chair instead of standing up. Yeah.
Source Elements.
Let's now think about the pandemic and remote working. How's the pandemic affected your work?
It's difficult to compare, actually, because, yeah, I mean, you're in the middle of a pandemic and you don't know what would have happened if the pandemic wasn't there. But if I compare it to the year before the pandemic happened or hit, I think the amount of work was slightly more. So I'm not sure if I can...
Since?
Okay, during the pandemic. Yeah, since the pandemic. Obviously, like, that first 2 months were, like, terrible. Because everyone was like, we don't have the budget anymore. Everyone's working from home, adjusting, adapting, blah, blah, blah.
We'll sit this one out, for a month or two,
Right. But then after a couple of months when everyone was used to it, they were like, okay, let's start it up again. And no, I had quite a good year, actually. 2020 wasn't that bad. So it was better than 2019. So yeah, no.
And you said earlier that your work is now 100% remote, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. That I think that helped too. I bought my booth, obviously, before the pandemic hit. And it really helped me because, suddenly a lot of clients were like, we cannot go to a studio because of the social distancing, et cetera, et cetera. So we need someone who can record from home. I had everything I needed. I was ready to go. I was like, here I am. And you can even...
You got your timing was bang on. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so how do you see working in post-pandemic times, if there'll ever be post-pandemic indeed?
Yeah, that's the question, right? People have adjusted and they're like, the work from home, they do like it in general, I guess. So they... much better understand that you are not able to come to a studio. I can go to a studio in Budapest, or I can fly out to wherever you want me to go, but that's going to be too expensive to buy a plane ticket and fly to Brussels or London or wherever it is. I've had over the past, before the pandemic, I had like several clients like being disappointed, like, you cannot come to Brussels? Oh, no, we'll have to look for someone else. I'm like, okay. Because they didn't even want to use Source Connect or something similar or something. Didn't know how to use it or I don't know.
Naive fools! Yeah.
Yeah, right. But I think people have adjusted and they're much more open to it. Like, sure, we can make the distance work. That's not a problem at all. I mean, especially with Source Connect, it's just... I've had sessions with people all over the world, from South Africa to the United States to name it.
So in a way, it's kind of enlarged your client or the possibilities of your client base because you're connected to the global village, effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are part of that global village.
Yeah. Yeah. No, especially since I'm speaking international or global English.
Yes.
Your clients are all over the world because someone, for example, in South Africa wants... to produce a commercial that will be broadcast worldwide, now it's easier for them to find me and for me to be found, I guess, and to be able to work for them.
So how do you personally find working remotely?
I love it. I've been doing it for so long, working from home. Yeah, and the remote part is fun too, because it kind of feels like you're in the studio. you're actually still going to a studio, but not really physically going, right?
Yeah.
It's just your voice that travels to that other studio.
The analogy I always like to use is the piece of string between the booth and the sound desk just happens to be about 1,000 miles long rather than 10 foot long.
Yeah, absolutely. And some studios also have like a separate voice booth without a window, for example. So, yeah, you don't have to be in the same room or physical space or city or whatever.
No.
You can be anywhere. No. And just like we're talking right now, right? We're talking right now, and it feels like you're sitting next to me. I can't see you, but I can hear you clearly.
Yes. And emotionally, we're close together.
Oh, yes, we are, Mike.
How do you think your clients find working remotely?
Since a lot of the clients are still working from home, especially in Europe, I'm not sure how the situation in, UK is not part of Europe anymore, right?
I think I need to swiftly move on from this one. I can't be political. It just makes me cry.
Okay, no worries.
So you think most of your clients enjoy working remotely?
Well, most of them are actually still working from home themselves, and they enjoy it. They're not in a traffic in a morning rush, a traffic jam when they're going to work or from work, or they can spend more time with their kids. So I think they're kind of used to it by now. Most of them, a lot of them, and so it's fairly easy for them to just book someone who has his own studio, and just everything is taken care of. You don't have to book the studio anymore. You can dial in into the studio if they want. They don't have to. And afterwards, I just send the WAV file via email to them, and it's and all said and done, and we're done.
Source Elements.
At Source Elements, we have a philosophy that when we're apart, making things together helps us stay connected as human beings and creates a bond. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that statement?
I think it's the next thing after actually being in the same space, right? Like connecting with other people over a cup of coffee while you're in the same room, obviously, is probably a little bit better, I guess, because you can see facial mm-hmm. expressions, and you probably have a little bit more time to get to know each other. But this is the next best thing after that. The sound quality is so amazing. It feels like you're in this. I mean, if I wouldn't have like headphones on right now, and you'd be on speakers and just close my eyes, I can still close my eyes with headphones on, obviously. But then it would feel like you would be in the same room, I guess, if you have very good speakers.
Yeah. How long have you had Source Connect then?
I do find that a lot of Europeans are a little bit wary of the Source Connect thing because it's quite expensive, I think, especially if you buy the license forever. And the Dutch and the Belgians are like, they keep their budgets in mind. So they're like, oh, let's not use, or let's use something cheaper or different, something different. But Americans, for example, and people in London, in the United mm-hmm. In the UK, the United Kingdom, yeah, they love it. And that's why I need to have it, because I want to connect with everyone all over the world. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the monthly rental of Source Connect is, what is it, $35, I think.
Yeah.
If you can't earn that in the first 20 minutes of your session, you're in the wrong job.
True. No. I mean, for me, I mean, I would pay for it. I wouldn't mind, but a lot of the studios are wary of that. I don't know why. And it's just like the chicken and the egg, right? I have it, but if studios don't have it, or the studio has it, but the voice actor doesn't have it, then yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's so weird.
My answer always to that is use a better quality of voice artist. Yes.
True. So true. So true.
Okay. So what advice would you pass on to someone trying a remote workflow for the first time?
In my experience, it's very important to be available. You have to be available, because a lot of the voiceover part is the last part usually, and you as an audio engineer can probably confirm this, is the last part that comes to creating the project most times. So they're like, okay, we have 1 hour left and we need a voice right now. And if you can say yes to that, yes, I'm available, then you're the guy. And if you're ready technically for that, so they can dial in and listen listen in and direct you, or not, if it's a self-directed session, then you've got the job and you're making money. If you have to say, well, I'm not available today, but like maybe tomorrow or next week because I'm away or I'm too busy with other stuff, then it's not going to work out. So availability is like very important, I believe.
Availability and also preparation seems to be from what you're saying.
Oh yeah, everything.
Being ready to record at a moment's notice.
Yes, yeah, your gear has to be ready. You have to be able to just, the computer has to be on basically. That's what I do. My computer is always on and I just have to hit that record button and record and that's it. And sometimes clients are like, we need this very, very quickly. We have 1 hour because...
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, because we've contacted a voice artist before and he's not available and you're actually our second choice, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, ow, this hurts. But...
I'm going to make you my first choice in future. Yeah.
Yeah, they will. They might. They might do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have an extra client because you're quick.
Absolutely.
And good. Yeah.
What do you think are the pitfalls to avoid?
That's a tough one, I guess. The pitfalls.
Interestingly enough, I mean, voice people find this a harder question.
Yeah.
Because the elephant in the room for sound engineers quite often, or editors or other people who are remote working, voice people always have headphones on because they're in a booth. But it's surprising the amount of people who expect to have remote collaboration and don't wear headphones. So the other end, you hear yourself coming back when the other over the other end's microphone. And that can be quite disconcerting.
That's true. Yeah. But is that really a pitfall?
I think so, because personally I think it's, if you start with your headphones on, no one's going to sort of say, I can hear myself coming back.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah,
and if they do, it's a routing issue on your desk, not anything to do with your loudspeakers.
True. Yeah, that's very true.
Source Elements.
Okay, let's now consider, what would you say is the recipe for your success? What's your top ingredient?
Believing in myself, like going for it, persistence, being persistent, and just doing stuff. I'm not that I'm like someone who does everything all the time. I'm a procrastinator as well once in a while. And
why put off today what you could do tomorrow?
Right. Yeah, that's me. But on the other hand, if you really want something and you go for it and you succeed, yeah, that's amazing. I think if you're able to do that and focus on the right stuff, yep.
Okay, what would you say is the thing you'd most like our listeners to take away from this interview?
That Source Connect is the best. No.
very good.
Right? I didn't, I didn't get paid for this, by the way. I think the takeaway is, especially if you're a new voice artist or even an audio engineer, just make sure that you're ready. Not only you yourself being ready to analyze a script or to... know how to work with your DAW, but like the technical stuff needs to be ready too, and make sure you have a backup plan for when it goes wrong, that you can still get the work done in a timely manner.
Yep.
So okay. Have that Source Connect subscription ready.
Yeah, oh yes. Very good.
Source Elements.
How would you like to change the industry if you could?
I think what's not going well in the voice talent industry is the rates are going down, which is not good. I think they should be going up. So that's something that should change. If I could, I would change that, but it's not going to change, obviously.
Do you think rates are going down because of the flood of practitioners and it's becoming a race to the bottom in terms of price? Or
I don't like to use the race to the bottom thing because I'm not sure if that's really true. But it is true that, for example, like the people on Fiverr, they don't know what the people that are voice artists on there, they don't know actually the standard rates. They don't know what a fair rate is. Yeah, they might ruin it for like the professionals, I guess. Because your clients are getting used to that, right? Like lower quality, lower rates. But right now, there's still enough clients who still like the professionals and the good equipment and the good sound quality. And obviously there is a difference.
There's a nice quote I once read that says, if you think it's expensive to hire a professional, try hiring an amateur.
Yeah, that's true.
And
professionals get work done quickly.
Yes.
Usually, and they're more expensive, but in the end, they're going to be cheaper. And that's what you're saying, right?
Yes, and to a higher quality with less artifacts and less problems. And they're consistent.
Yeah.
And if they do a pickup, they match themselves. They don't sound very different in their intonation every time they change.
Right.
that's the difference between a professional and an amateur, I always think.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's why I like Mac too, because it is more expensive, but I can keep my MacBook, for example, for like 5 years and it still works after 5 years, and I can sell it and still get some decent money for it. I used to work with PC a lot, and oh my God, they were so horrible after a couple of years. Just 1-2 years, your computer was just done, was crap.
You realize you have just lit the blue flame and the internet is now on fire.
Yeah. Right.
With Mac VPC hatred.
Yeah.
Yes. Whoa! Calm down, internet.
It's okay. Yeah. Well, people are allowed to use PC if they prefer it. It's fine. I'm just talking about my preference.
It's okay to be misguided. That's not a problem.
Right.
Yep. No, I'm only kidding. I have used both in my time. What would you like as your audio epitaph?
I'm sorry, what is that?
An epitaph is your inscription on your gravestone.
Oh, okay. Audio epitaph. I always have to think about this song. I can't remember which band it's from, but they have a song called Hey Look Ma, I Made It. That's one of the lyrics. And I love that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I love that lyric, so that pops to mind. Like,
yeah.
And every time I have a little success, I'm like, hey, look, Ma, I've made it.
Oh, that's very cool.
So, yeah, probably that one. I love that one.
Okay.
Source Elements.
I'm going to ask a question that I tend to ask all the sort of the women, which is, are you aware of any sort of gender issues? What's it like to be a woman in a sort of slightly male-orientated world? But I kind of feel, to ask the balance, I need to ask the men the same question as well. Do you feel it's a male-dominated industry? And do you think there are gender identity issues within our industry?
I don't feel that, but that's probably me, I guess, because I'm sure, I mean, if women are saying that there are issues, then there are issues, I guess. It's not that if I can see them, it's not that they're not there. So
they don't come from you. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
The issues don't come from you.
Well, yes. I don't know. Maybe I'm part of the issue. I don't know. I hope not. But I try to be open and get someone else's thoughts about this and learn from other people's experiences. But yeah, there are a lot of men in this business and not enough women, I guess. That's for sure. I'm not sure if it's really an issue. I mean, I don't feel that it is an issue, but it probably is an issue. If you understand what
sure.
I mean, yeah.
Totally. What you're saying is I'm not empathetic. If there are issues, I'd like to hear them and understand them and see what I can do.
Correct.
But I'm just not sure I'm totally aware what they are.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. In the same way, I mean, I kind of agree with you to a degree in that whenever I hire someone to work for me, it's always a case of, number one, are they fun to work with?
Uh-huh.
Number two, are they good at what they do? Number three, can I afford them? And number 647 trillion is, are they a man or a woman? You know, I just don't care. I don't think of people's gender at all. I think of them as people.
Yeah.
So for me, gender's a non-issue, but I think it's very easy. It's a bit like saying, for the average white person, racism's not a problem.
Right, yeah.
What racism?
Yeah. It's I think it's very similar, yeah. Because we're not aware of any problems. But that doesn't mean that there aren't any problems. Yeah. But it's an interesting discussion to have. I don't have the answer to that discussion, but it's a very interesting discussion to have, I guess.
Well, I'm slightly loath to ask the question, but then loath to ask the question in terms of not because I don't want to hear the answers, but because I don't always understand what the problem is.
Yeah.
And partly, if I'm having to ask the question, it means there is a problem, which means it's a shame that I have to ask the question.
Right, yeah. Yep.
In the same way, there's a huge outcry at the moment about safety for women in Britain because a police officer was recently convicted of murdering someone.
Oh, wow.
While he was off duty. Uh-huh. And it's brought up a lot of issues about women's safety in Britain, and everyone's saying, oh, we should have apps that allow women to be safe, and people are saying, no, what we should actually be doing is addressing the fact, why do our men in our society think it's okay to attack women?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to be addressing, not teaching women to defend themselves.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. I don't have the answer. Unfortunately, I wish I could solve those problems, but it's very
no. I don't either.
Right. It's important to read up on these things, and I'm not sure if I really want to be part of that discussion. I don't think I have a lot of knowledge to add to the discussion. But I like to listen.
But we
about
can
this.
Still be empathetic.
Oh yeah, we can be empathetic, and we need to listen to these things and just make sure that we at least try to understand them. Yeah.
Source Elements.
My last question kind of is about work in terms of how do you find using an agent versus getting self-generated work?
A very interesting question as well. Because especially on the mainland in Europe, we don't have agents, actually. There are a couple of agencies in Europe. Like in the Netherlands, I'm working with voicebooking.com, for example. But they're not really agents. They're just, they're an online website. They try to find work online from people that are looking for voiceovers for online. But now that I'm starting to get into the United States market, I have to learn to work with agents, and it's interesting. It's different, and I kind of like it at some point because you can actually hand over some extra work that you're doing yourself, I guess, that you can hand it to the agents. Like, hey, you look for the client, you negotiate with the client, and let me know when you're ready and you're done negotiating.
Yes, I do the art, you do the science.
Right. Yeah, that's very convenient and fun. To be able to do that, yeah.
But in a way, there's kind of, in the US, it would seem that because of this sort of reliance on the sense of agents, that there's, to a degree, some obfuscation where you're not taken seriously unless you have an agent.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah.
To a degree.
That's true. That's just the way it works in the United States, I guess.
Mm.
Up until now, I'm sure it's going to change eventually, I don't know.
And I wonder if that's because in the States there's a great thing of whether you're union or non-union.
True.
And it's a concept that I'm not sure about in Belgium or how you've experienced life in Budapest, but in the UK, there's no such thing as union on non-union gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept in America where most things are union rates, I kind of applaud the sensation of keeping rates where they're looking after everyone's well-being and all this sort of thing and keeping rates to a sort of professional standard. It's a dynamic that I can't understand because I'm not in it, because we don't have such a thing in the UK. I find it quite alien, this concept of union v non-union.
Right. But I think since 2008 or something, there's a lot more non-union work in the United States as well. The union, apparently, the way I understand it, and I'm not a specialist on this, but the union is getting smaller and smaller. Union work is less in the past years.
Uh-huh.
And a lot more people and agents are working non-union. So I'm not sure if it's going in the right direction in the United States. If you like,
which interestingly enough can be quite a paradox, because yes, it's great that it opens up and all that sort of thing, and I think it's very good to sort of have a sense of open free markets. I've always been a believer in that within the European market. I can say that quite confidently as an ex-European,
right?
Sadly, but I think the other side of the coin is that if you get too much deregulation, that you can get a flood of people looking for work, you can get too many fivers. There can be a case of deregulation to the point where you get like the American health system where it becomes a complete zoo.
Yeah, that's true. On the other hand, going back to the Fiverr thing, I have noticed several clients that were on a P2P website, not my clients, but in general, big production companies being on P2P websites. And then later on, I heard, well, they moved on from that and went to an agent because they were like, oh, we were getting a lot of rubbish as well. People that were trying to attempt voiceover work, but weren't actually really ready.
Couldn't quite cut the mustard, as we say.
Yeah. And so they get like 100, 200 auditions and like 75% is bad. If you go to an agent, the agent does all that work for the client as well.
Yes. You're choosing which cream do I like, and you're not having to to worry about the milk. Yeah.
And so I think especially the bigger clients, the bigger production companies, they're like, we don't have time to sift all through all that rubbish. So we need to have like the good guys immediately. We want to be sure that whenever we need them, actually tomorrow or whenever, that they're actually ready and they're good and they can analyze the script and their equipment is good, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe, I don't know, maybe there will always be enough work for the higher tier jobs. I don't know.
I hope so. I mean, I've always thought that there should be. What I would not like to happen is for the music world where the same paradox has kind of happened with record labels where, you know, in the 70s, 60s, 70s and 80s, it was really, really hard to get signed as a group and a band.
Yeah.
And the A&R artists were in total control of who became signed artists and who could release music. Now, anyone and their dog can release music, which is great. Yeah. But the trouble with that also is everyone and their dog does release music. So actually, how do we as consumers find good music? Because there's so much to sift through. It's a bit like YouTube's lovely. It's brilliant. But there's an awful lot of rubbish on YouTube as well.
Yeah, true. And that's maybe where radio stations come in, right? They can make that selection for you, so you switch on the radio station and then you're listening to some quality music. At least the quality of the recording is going to be good.
Yes. So with freedom and democratizing everything is a good thing, but there's also the paradox of too much freedom, too much choice can be quite a bane as well.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see how the market settles over time. And over history, looking back, I don't feel very sorry for the record companies, I have to say.
No, true. Yeah. I guess so.
I feel more sorrow for the music artists who I think are being sort of screwed by the Spotifys of the world.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But I think it probably all comes back to which artist is the most creative, right? Because you said there's a lot of rubbish on YouTube. Well, if you're creative,
yes,
and you make quality stuff, then you're probably going to come up with a way to be popular on YouTube some way or another.
I agree. I've always thought cream rises. Some people turn around and go, floats.
Right.
That's true with the largest common denominator sort of thing. But if you do come up with the goods, and in the same way, I think as a voice artist, if you keep delivering the goods and to a high level and keep coming back with customers that are happy, your customer base will expand. Word of mouth will work. You know, there is future and there is hope. Just because you can go and buy a £100 USB mic, sit there and go, well, I can use Zoom, it's free, it doesn't mean you're going to have a successful career.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yes, totally.
So I think that's a very good note on which to end and say thank you very much for your time, Serge. It's been absolutely fascinating talking to you. I've really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. This was amazing. Thank you, Mike. Love talking to you.
And keep spreading the word about Source Elements. Keep evangelizing.
I will.
Okay, thank you, Serge.
You're welcome. Talk to you next time.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Source Elements on the Mic was recorded using Source Connect. Source Elements on the Mic, the audio and remote working podcast for thinking ears. Source Elements.